Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Champions League Takeaway here on Ranks FC. It's your favourite transatlantic football podcast for the first time this week, looking back at all of Tuesday's Champions League action. And there were some big names in action tonight. It's been a very, very intriguing evening in the Champions League. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host today. And joining me across the water, all the way from San Diego, is Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Hello, mate. Yeah, I'm good. That was, I just watched a belter of a game, so I'm happy. Happy to watch a big game that lived up to expectations.
I mean, it's where we're going to start. We're going to start at Anfield with Liverpool's win over Real Madrid. I did think about it. I was like, is it Liverpool, Real Madrid top? Is it PSG, Bayern top? We're talking about two of the biggest clubs in the world in Liverpool and Real Madrid. Probably the two best teams in Europe so far this season in PSG and Bayern. It was a toss up. But alas, we're going to go to Anfield first.
You always go with royalty first, mate. And that's what we've got in this fixture.
Betis weren't playing today.
You know, this is a matchup that you've just always got to make sure that you watch, no matter what season it is, because of the pedigree that exists. And it was a really good game, and it's an unbelievable win for Liverpool from every perspective, to be honest. Firstly, for the fans who have got one over on Trent, which they would have wanted coming into the game, first and foremost, they wouldn't have wanted him scoring or succeeding in beating them. So that was good for them. It's good for the team generally, because they now have a confidence and cohesiveness about them. And that's because they've pretty much gone back to what they used to do when they were a successful football team last season. And then on top of all of that, you've just got the fact that Arne Slot has earned his credibility back. It was 1 week ago we were getting Slot out because of his Carabao Cup decision to play the kids, to complain, to throw a cup away. And in the past two games, Liverpool have won a Premier League match against Aston Villa with a clean sheet and beaten Real Madrid at home and kept a clean sheet. And that is exactly what he needed to happen in these next two games. Liverpool were extremely good in this fixture, like easily their best performance of the season so far. It was only 1-0. It would have been more, but for Courtois putting in a 9 out of 10 performance. Salah looking much, much better. Ekitike showing that he deserves to just keep starting in that central role. Szoboszlai, just the most consistent performer in this team every single time. Wirtz had his best game in a Liverpool shirt. No, he's not among the goals. He's not getting the assists, but he worked really, really well in the actual format of the team.
He didn't get an assist, by the way, for that Szoboszlai chance.
Szoboszlai just apologised to him for that, actually. He was interviewed on CBS after the game with Jamie Carragher, and one of the first things he did was to apologise to Florian Wirtz for not scoring it. So that was good of him. But there was just a completely different feel about everyone and about the stadium and everything. It was just a proper traditional big Champions League night at Anfield. And from the first moment, you sensed that everyone was properly on it. And I think the best credit you can give to Liverpool is that I don't think there was a single player that was outshone by their opposite number on Real Madrid. I think they beat them in every single position in this game, which is a blow.
Maybe not in goal, but not really Mamardashvili's fault. He didn't have loads to do.
Yeah, I mean, Mamardashvili did fine. Like, if he'd have been tested, he might have, because he looked on good form, to be honest, when he was tested. But yeah, Courtois, I guess. Courtois plus the Liverpool 10 outfield players would probably make the team of the day from this particular fixture, which is saying a lot. I was interested coming into the game because Liverpool were favourites to win the game, and I wasn't completely sure about that. But I guess Real Madrid haven't been completely cohesive themselves. But personally, I still would have said that over the course of the season, they've been better. And would have felt they could at least come to Anfield and get something from the game. But it turns out they were, bookies were right. Liverpool should have been favourites because they won it, to be honest, in a very convincing manner. It took a while for the goal to come and they had to wait it out for it to open up. But to be honest, by the time it did come, Real Madrid were looking leggy, lethargic. They were chasing shadows. Like 5 minutes before the goal came, Tchouameni showed just like, he was just in the shade. Like the midfield was just getting overrun and overrun and overrun. And we're seeing the benefits of Liverpool just going every week now. Szoboszlai, Gravenberch, McAllister, just keep doing it. As many times as you can get that pattern out, get it out there, because that is helping you get back in the groove that you had last season. Don't mess around with this. And Real Madrid really couldn't keep pace. And it showed when Bellingham was the guy that ended up chasing back on Gravenberch just before the hour mark. He makes the foul. Gravenberch goes down. And it's that free kick that leads to McAllister heading it home. And it's the decisive goal of the night. Rodrigo came on with 20 minutes left to try and give Real Madrid something else. Mbappe had probably their best chance 5 minutes after that, a first time effort that just veered wide, looked like it might be going in when he first hit it, but it just managed to bend away from the goal. Trent came on with 10 minutes left. So Liverpool fans got their chance to berate him in the perfect fashion, really, because they're already winning. They were in command. There's only 10 minutes left. They didn't look like there would be a big chance for Trent to make an impact, and he didn't at all, really. So Liverpool fans enjoyed booing him every chance they got. It wasn't ferocious, I wouldn't say. It didn't seem like it was too. And, you know, there was still a few people clapping him along the way as well. But they certainly enjoyed the fact and were relieved every time he got on the ball and it didn't come off for him. You know, he mainly kept things simple. He tried a couple of things that didn't come off. So, yeah, there were a few ironic cheers anytime that was the case. But I think the big lesson here for Slot is to just go back to basics. I mean, obviously, you've got Mamardashvili starting this game. Wirtz came in and you've got Ekitike up top. But beyond that, you're pretty much looking at the foundations of a team that was there last season. Conor Bradley obviously wasn't a regular, but he knows how the team functions. And that has felt so important. And I think now, with the learnings of the last two games, to get Liverpool's season back on track, to keep these clean sheets, this is the team. This is the team that you have to get into. So it's these guys, along with, you know, Isak shouldn't be rushed back into this starting lineup for sure. Like, put him back on the bench for the next game, by all means, but don't put him in the starting lineup. Gakpo and Wirtz will probably rotate in and out as seems right. But beyond that, you've really got to earn your place now back into this team. You know, the other new signings and stuff have got a bit of work to do. But a brilliant night, mate, and a brilliant game for Liverpool to enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that you brought up Conor Bradley, because this was a big game for him, right? Not only is it, okay, you've had a good performance against Aston Villa, there's a bit more of a kind of calmness about this back line, but also step up and prove it. Because Conor Bradley, I mean, look, was a regular towards the back end of last season, but has still got big shoes to fill in that regard. I thought he was immense down that right-hand side. I thought the fact that he was able to close off Vinicius Jr. on multiple occasions, not only that, but then getting forward as well and getting onto those underlaps. Mo Salah and him seem to have a bit more of an understanding than some of the rest of the combinations that we've seen so far this season. And something that you and I talked about on the Patreon after Liverpool's win against Aston Villa on Monday, when we released our post box, was the, you know, element of consistency. It's like, okay, work the new signings in slowly. And we saw one outfield new signing start against Villa at the weekend in Ekitike. And this time it was two. Florian Wirtz comes in for Cody Gakpo, and as you say, has perhaps his best game in a Liverpool shirt. It's about kind of giving them a basis to succeed as well. You know, you have to give them a platform in order that they're going to come in and not everything is going to change overnight. And I think that when we're seeing that now and in these two performances, look, they weren't perfect against Villa, I don't think, but this felt far more cohesive. And we're seeing more from Mo Salah in a defensive capacity, you know, that getting back and making sure that the interchanges are tight and close. And also, it feels like there is more of an energy about this Liverpool side. So when you look at that in the context of this game as a whole, you know, perhaps it is now, you know, one of those where you can work the new signings in as you go on a run of form. You know, you're not asking them to come in and change the situation every time they come onto the pitch. You're asking them to come in and find their place in a team that feels a lot more settled than it did a couple of weeks ago. And look, we said after the game in the Carabao Cup against Crystal Palace that if those changes meant that Liverpool won at the weekend, then Arne Slot could look at that and say, well, it's completely justified. And now that, you know, there's been a win in the weekend in the Premier League and a huge win over Real Madrid, who, okay, haven't been perfect so far this season, but I think we saw them in that game against Barcelona a couple of weeks ago in El Clasico, you know, put together one of their most cohesive performances of the season and really shut down a Barcelona side that have been difficult to stop in an attacking perspective, even if they've been, you know, a little bit here and there in terms of their defensive line. Like, we saw Real Madrid really, really kind of come out in that game and kind of lay down a marker. So for someone to come out here in the form of Liverpool and say, okay, you know, you might be streaming away at the top of the league in La Liga. And look, I don't think that's done. But, you know, you might have set yourselves up for a good space there, but there is more to this than it. And we can come and shut you down. And look, very few people have shut Kylian Mbappe down this season, right? Considering the streak of form he's been on. And considering where Liverpool have been from a defensive perspective, I don't think you would have got, you know, you would have got pretty good odds, I think, on them keeping a clean sheet against a Kylian Mbappe-led attack. But they managed that and in fine style as well.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, Mbappe had a couple of chances and on another day would have scored. But yeah, Liverpool were definitely better defensively. Having Robertson back there has definitely been improved over having Kirk as there. He's going to have to really be patient, I think, because there's no way that you go into that Man City game next and chop out Robertson for Kirkez. Like, there's just no way you're doing that at the moment. So it's kind of simple now for Slot, because he just says, right, look, I've got a winning formula and I'm not changing it. It's up to the rest of you now, for wait for your chance. And when it comes, take it, because, you know, we've been all over the place this season. We started with, was it 6 or 7 games in a row winning, whatever it was, and then 6 defeats in 7 to follow. I'm taking this off the top of my head.
No. You're in the right ballpark.
They've gone from one to the other. Like, it was completely contrast. And now suddenly they've got back-to-back wins. So he needs to actually believe in the side this time, because he's like, because none of us were actually convinced when they were in their last win streak, because it wasn't like this. Like,
these two performances have been very different to the performances where they were winning at the start of the season.
Much more controlled. And even Mo Salah looks more like Mo Salah now, like in an attacking sense. I was watching it thinking, oh, I need him back in my fantasy team. And I wrote that in my like FPL group and they're like, shut up. And I'm like, I'm not joking. Like, you see it. You suddenly just see him, like the spark, the like when he starts to, you know, he gets to the edge of the box and there's a couple of touches he takes inside looking to get that shot
the
away.
Physicality of it all as well.
And
I
he's,
think.
Yeah, he looks to me like he's getting back. So I genuinely will be looking at that, and I'll be looking at him coming into form again. Liverpool have got some nice fixtures coming up after the international break. Like, it's a good little spell for them to really get themselves set again. So obviously a massive game for them coming up at the weekend, but there's no reason why they can't win that one as well, to be honest.
Yeah, well, we will see. And we will see, obviously, how City get on tomorrow. We'll be talking about them on tomorrow's Champions League takeaways. We'll have more to discuss when it comes to that moment. Let's come on, though, and let's go to PSG against Bayern. 2-1 to Bayern Munich in Paris. A big, big result for Bayern. And look, I looked at this and thought, this is the game I'm really excited about tonight, because we're talking about the current reigning champions of the Champions League coming up against a team in Bayern who have been, I think, by almost any metric, the best team in Europe so far this season, right? 15 wins out of 15 before tonight across the course of the season. It has been remarkable. They'd conceded 2 goals in the Champions League and 3 in the Bundesliga, I think, up to this point. And you're looking at it and saying, okay, wow. And there's a great article on The Athletic today by Seb Stafford-Bloor and Liam Tharm about why these two should be considered in that bracket. They were 1 and 2 in the Champions League table before we started today as well. And Bayern have gone there. And I think that, you know, the way that this game panned out was very much game of two halves. And I'll kind of explain why in a second. But the first 45 minutes where Bayern were 2-0 up in Paris against PSG was one of the most remarkable 45 minutes I've seen from a football team in a while. They were really, really, really excellent. Like one of the most complete, well put together, well executed tactical plans you've seen against the Luis Enrique side, who conquered all comers last season. And look, Luis Diaz scores an early opener 4 minutes in. Earliest goal against PSG in the Champions League since Romelu Lukaku for United, back on that famous 3-1 win all those years ago. So it's a rarity to score against this PSG side in the early stages. Really, really nice goal. Gorgeous flick from Harry Kane, release Elise. He gets in behind, his efforts save, but Diaz picks up the pieces, finds the back of the net. And look, in the spell after that, sort of 10 minutes, PSG had a lot of the ball and they did have a spell where they pinned Bayern back in with possession, but Bayern looked relatively comfortable playing against the ball. Now, this would become a thing later on in the game. But even in this early stage, you're looking at it and saying, oh, that Pavlovic-Kimmich double pivot, moving really nicely around the pitch, getting into those spaces and making things happen. PSG did think they had an equaliser. Dembele forced it home from close range. He was marginally offside. He picked up an injury in doing so, or aggravated a prior injury. He said before the game against Nice that his hamstring wasn't feeling great. And then he was dropped into this game, which had an incredible intensity about it in the opening exchanges, and was basically off within 20 minutes of the game starting. And the game stayed quite open for the next got a spell of it. Big chances for both teams. Barcola misses a one-on-one with Manuel Neuer. Elise hits the inside of the post for Bayern. But Bayern eventually started to make the stranglehold count, right? They really did start to grow into the game in terms of, okay, we've let PSG have the ball for a little while now, and now suddenly we're going to start to demand a little bit of that possession back. And Diaz fires home a second after some incredible counter-pressing up top. They force Marquinhos into losing the ball on the edge of the area. Luis Diaz just nicks it off his toes and smashes the ball home past Chevalier. And Bayern kept pushing, right? Stanisic has a goal ruled out correctly for offside after another lovely through ball from Harry Kane. The whole game swung on the halftime whistle, because there's this wild challenge from Luis Diaz on Hakimi, and the referee didn't call it to begin with, but Hakimi is down and seriously injured. You can tell, right? Like, that Hakimi has really, really hurt himself in this challenge, and it didn't look like a great challenge in real terms. The referee goes over the screen for a red card check. He gives the red card. It's an absolutely ridiculous challenge that Luis Diaz makes here. He comes through the back of him. He's high. He's late. It looks like a pretty horrendous injury on Hakimi. So obviously wishing him a speedy recovery, but this could be a couple of weeks, maybe a couple of months out with the way that he rolled on his ankle after the challenge came in. So two goals and a red card for Luis Diaz. I enjoyed Raf Honigstein saying, you know, here in the UK on BT Sport, that he was the tragic hero of the night, two goals and a red card. But it was one of those kind of very strange ones. Maybe anti-hero would be a little bit more appropriate. And what happened then was that the second half was just much less of a spectacle. Bayern hit the brakes. They went 4-4-1 and basically said to PSG, come on then, break us down. And they've been defensively rock solid all season long. They looked relatively comfortable playing completely against the ball. They had this low block. They occasionally hit the counter punch, but not particularly often. And PSG have struggled a bit against low blocks this season. They finally did get the kind of breakthrough goal, if you will, with about 20 minutes left to play. It was a really nice, really nicely worked goal. Lovely cross from the angle by Kangin Lee, who'd come on for Dembele, tapped home by fellow substitute Joao Neves. And Neves came very close to equalising with a header just a couple of moments after that. One hell of a leap in the middle of the box. For such a small geezer, he really does get these leaps on players. And the way that he reads the flight of the ball is really quite incredible. But it went narrowly wide. Last 15 minutes, one-way traffic, aerial bombardment, 10 men behind the ball from a Bayern perspective. But without Dembele, PSG just couldn't quite find that killer pass. And Bayern held out to bring home a big win. I thought it was really interesting. Immediate huddle on the pitch. Neuer just dragging everyone into a huddle like the second that the full-time whistle went. And company comes streaking over to join this huddle. And it was one of those being like, that is a big performance in every sense of the word. First half, absolutely brilliant. Man for man with PSG and the better side by pretty much any margin you could give. And in the second half, you know, players who aren't used to doing that, Michael Elise playing basically as a makeshift right back, you know, doubling up down that side, winning tackles, winning challenges in those areas. Every single player to a man for Bayern in their defensive outfit, basically just sitting there and going, you are not coming through. Now, PSG did find one, but they didn't find a second. And Bayern getting a huge win at the Parc des Princes. It just a very, very impressive performance in two very different ways in the two halves. But Bayern's serious, serious contenders here.
Yeah, I mean, Vincent Kompany's come a long way, eh? People saying he wasn't up to this task, saying that he was out of his depth and all these sort of things. And here he is on an unbelievable run that does set them aside from everyone else and puts them in that conversation to say, can they go and win the competition this season? You know, to go and beat PSG is remarkable, but to make it 16 wins in a row is crazy. Obviously, like, these two sides are, you know, they've been heavily built in terms of the transfer market. I mean, there's got to be almost like £1.5 billion worth of talent out there on the pitch. Like, it's unbelievable if you were to add up all the transfer fees and stuff that are out there. But of all the transfers that were out there for Bayern Munich, Luis Diaz has really proved himself at Bayern this season. And it's a shame he's got this red card, because, like you say, he's a hero, but it's tainted. And fortunately for him, it hasn't gone on to cost them the game, because it just seemed, I don't know, was if he was flustered or if he was frustrated. Or
he shouldn't be flustered or frustrated. He scored two goals and they're winning 2-0 and it's on the halftime whistle. I've no idea what possessed him to
it
make
was just
that
unnecessary
challenge.
Yeah, it was like he was lashing out or something. I don't know. I can't even imagine what he's doing, but it's very silly, because after putting his side in control of the game, he could have cost him the game in that moment, because against most teams, PSG are going to overrun you if you've only got 10 men. But another strength is that Vincent Kompany's built them to be an aggressive bunch, but also systematically safe. And I think that's what you've seen here from Bayern, and from what I've seen in the highlights that I've been watching since the game ended. So yeah, a big moment for Bayern, a massive moment for Vincent Kompany, because again, he's gone head to head with one of the best bosses in this tournament, in this competition, in history, and he's shown that he can do it. So that's something in terms of mindset that is reassuring for the players and for him and for the whole club.
Yeah. I mean, as you say, he's come a long way. It does feel mad that, and I really can't wait to see when Kompany decides he's going to take over from Pep after Pep decides to leave City, how Scott Parker gets on with this Bayern Munich job. It's going to be very, very entertaining in a number of ways. But a huge result for Bayern. Kompany said before the season began, he was like, in the Champions League, we're going to be underdogs. We're going to be the Hoffenheim of the Champions League. I don't think anybody's talking about them in those kind of terms anymore. Yeah. Bayern have been outstanding all season long. Very much one of the favourites.
That's unbelievable. It's 16 wins.
It's ludicrous.
It's crazy.
Most football fans, if you like take them over the course of like the world, don't see 16 wins in a season.
Yeah. And like, to even at any stage, at any level, get that sort of dominance is crazy. But to be doing it domestically and in the toughest club competition in the world, and you're pitched in a game like this. I know PSG haven't been amazing this season. Like, domestically, like, PSG haven't hit the heights that Bayern have so far. But still, you're talking about the European champions. You're talking about a team that beat them in the Club World Cup. You've got something to aim for here. So yeah, really, really impressed by Bayern, and got to be putting themselves to be, well, favourites to win it at this rate.
Well, top of the table, 4 from 4 for Bayern Munich. We're going to take a little break there, and afterwards we're going to be talking about another team who are 4 from 4 in Arsenal after we get over to their North London rivals, Spurs, who had a big win themselves. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Champions League Takeaway here on Ranks FC. And it's a bit of a North London segment, this one. We are going to get to Arsenal's 3-0 win over Slavia Prague, which set a new club record for clean sheets in a row. But before we get to that, it was a big, big night in North London for Tottenham at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium as they hosted Copenhagen. A little bit of frustration, a little bit of dissent going around Spurs after that pretty paltry 1-0 loss to Chelsea at the weekend, where Spurs were pretty dreadful. So it was a big night for Thomas Frank. And in a first here on Champions League Takeaway on Ranks FC, we had a man on the ground. It's Sam Tai from Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Hey guys, so just watched Tottenham 4, Copenhagen 0. Honestly, coming into the game, thought it was going to be a bit of a slogfest between two teams that might struggle to score goals, because let's be honest, neither are in great form, or both are showing some vulnerabilities. But my God, what did I just witness from Copenhagen? One of the worst goalkeeper performances I have ever seen in my life. Dominic Kotarski, bow your head in shame. So bad for the first goal for Brendan Johnson, so bad for the second goal. And then just continued to be absolutely terrible throughout, although did make some saves in the second half. And it really undermined Copenhagen's performance. There are a bunch of balls that they're kind of like in midfield where the two players are leaving it for each other, and Spurs players would just nip in, take it and run down the other end and create a chance. I don't know if that was just a crisis of confidence for Copenhagen, or if they were maybe not used to being punished that severely in the Danish Super League. I'm not sure. It's hard to tell, but fair play to Spurs. Take advantage of a weak opponent. Take advantage of an opponent that is clearly showing some frailties. Interesting night for Randall Kolo Muani. I've got to say, like, looks like Thomas Frank is trying to play him into fitness and form. I think he's looking at him and saying, you're going to be my number nine for the season. The only way you can get fitness and form is to actually play. Mixed night for him. Plucks that ball out of the sky for the second goal. Oh, beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. But then he missed a couple of chances, and one of the first half was really bad, let's be honest. I'm a big fan of his, but I still need to see a little bit more. And then the final part of this voice note must go to Mickey van der Ven. Holy mother of God, what a goal. And finally, I have a great answer to the question, what is the best goal you have ever seen live? Because before, up until tonight, the answer was Matt Phillips at Selhurst Park, which is an absolutely rubbish answer. But now it's Mickey van der Ven summoning his inner Gareth Bale, summoning his inner Son Heung-min to roast the Copenhagen team and finish at the end of the run. Oh, it was brilliant. What a thrill. I actually celebrated it, cheered it, and I don't even care about Spurs. That's how good it was.
Well, thank you very much to Sam Tyler, Rank God there, live from Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
I like that. That made me miss Sam, you know. That made me miss Sam, hearing that.
It was great. I also love that Sam's first thought after seeing one of the best goals I've ever seen, I'll come on to it in a second, but was, I now don't have to talk about Matty Phillips anymore. That is the most Sam Tyler thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
It is a good point he makes, though, because people do always ask you, what's the best goal you've ever seen live? And like, my best goal I've ever seen live was Jack Wilshere's against Norwich for Arsenal, which is the team goal where they pass it inexplicably around them with all these like 1-2s and stuff. And it was wonderful being there. And it always makes, if you ever see any like package of like the Premier League's greatest goals or whatever, it's right up there. But barely anyone knows what I'm talking about when I say it. But I still stick to it because it was unbelievable. So we'll have to wait and see whether Sam's one ends up being more memorable. Because it's against Copenhagen in a game that most people won't actually have watched, there's a chance that people still don't know what he's talking about. But for, at least for today, they will.
Well, we'll come to this goal because I think he's right in there. I think this one might go down in history. It's very, very, very special. But look, let's just talk about this generally for a second. Tottenham 4, Copenhagen 0. I thought it was really interesting that Thomas Frank dispensed with the Polina Bentancur pivot off the back of what happened against Chelsea at the weekend and the frustration with Spurs' inability to create chances from open play. Pape Matar played behind Xavi Simons and next to Bentancur, and it was so much better from Spurs off the back of that change. The energy, the balance in midfield looked so much more offensively minded. Brendan Johnson opened the scorings after racing clear on the counter. Lovely pass from Xavi Simons to release him in behind the Copenhagen defence. No idea what the keeper was doing. Sam referenced it there, coming off his line. He was never going to get to this.
Wild.
Brennan Johnson just nicks it past him and taps the ball home. And look, Kolo Muani should have had a first half brace. The second of the chances he gets. The first one, he has to kind of dig out of his feet a little bit. But the second one is an absolute sitter. More good work from Xavi Simons, who had his best game in a Spurs shirt thus far. But it was plenty to like about the way that Spurs went about their business here. Some central creation. And actually what that did was it opened up the space in wide areas, which is something that Thomas Frank has been looking to exploit, right? Like they've been looking to play in those wide areas. That's where the creative spark has come so far this season. And actually, when you kind of look at it, when they were able to burst through the middle and open up chances, and Papi Mattisaar was really excellent here, I thought, they did manage to open those spaces up for everyone to exploit. They were a little sloppy at the start of the second half, but the nerves were settled when the keeper handed them another goal on a play. It was good from Kolo Muani, this, chasing down a lost cause, closes down the keeper, and it kind of ricochets up into the air. He takes a brilliant touch to pluck it out of the air and lays it on a plate for Odegaard to make it two. But just like at Bayern, just as soon as it went 2-0 and you were like, right, what are they going to do here for the rest of it? They, you know, there's a sting in the tail in terms of a red card. This time it's Brennan Johnson, takes a player out from behind, raked his Achilles. He had to go. He's a little unlucky, Brennan Johnson, I will say. I don't think there's any malice in it. I think he kind of slips more than anything else, which is slightly different to the Luis Diaz one. But I also don't think there's any real questions about it being a red. And just as Spurs look like they might rock, Mickey van der Ven scores this goal. One of the best goals you will ever see. He goes coast to coast in every sense of the word. He gets the ball on the edge of his own box. He slips through about three players. He outpaces another four and then he fires home past the keeper. It was a bit like Son against Burnley, but from even further back. It is one of the most incredible athletic feats that you will ever see on a football pitch.
I don't know, though. I'm not that impressed.
What do you mean?
It's so opportunistic. It's like he looked at one point like a dad at five-a-side who just wanted to keep going and going. I thought he was going to fall over halfway through it. I thought his body was going to take him forwards. Don't get me wrong, Van de Ven's extremely fast and an extremely good athlete. But I was like, he doesn't really know what he's doing here. And it's only because suddenly Copenhagen had five players around him. And it's like he just managed to burst through them because of the momentum that he had, right? And once he got through that, I don't think he could really believe he was suddenly in the other half of the field. Like at no point was any of this planned, right? So it's, of course it's great. And like to watch it live, it must have been brilliant. Like, don't get me wrong, it's great. It's just a powerful straight run. Nothing, he doesn't do anything. He just runs really powerfully with the ball and Copenhagen defend it terribly. So I'm sorry, but like,
you know what? I don't actually disagree with you in terms of that. Like, I actually do. I think it's completely opportunistic and that's fine, right? Like, as in you take the opportunities that come available to you. I think it's really similar to Son's goal against Burnley, which I also think is just direct running. You know, like where he sort of bursts through a couple of players and there's an element of that, you know, the opportunism about that. It's sort of nick the play ball around one player and then just run really fast in a straight line and then you finish it. It's a brilliant finish. Like, as in, that bit's not up for debate. He absolutely fires that home, you know, into the near post. A really, really good finish. But I think the opportunism elevates it rather than takes away from it, if I'm honest.
I don't know. I just find it, like, funnier rather than amazing. Like, that's kind of my hot take. I know most people will love it, especially Spurs fans or anyone that was there. But I just found it funnier than I did amazing. But I'm glad that Sam's got it to talk about, because at least he's got it on one on his list that he can reel off, and people will probably remember it, as I say, because it's Copenhagen, but it's a centre back going end to end or coast to coast, as you put it. So it is pretty rare that you see that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was pretty special. I agree with you. I think in the stadium it would have been kind of like jaws dropped.
I mean, I'd be more impressed if it was like Harry Maguire done that. But like Van de Ven. Like it's the he's powerful, he's fast, and
he's
he had quick, nothing
he's
to
fast
lose.
And he's got pace.
But yeah, it was a good moment.
If it was Yannick Vestergaard, we'd be talking about the best goal of all time. But alas, we are. Look, the one thing I will say is, you know, that kind of energy in the stadium, it felt like that goal gave the stadium the boost that is needed for a little while now. Like, it's been a little bit toxic. Maybe toxic is a bit too far, actually, but it's been a bit frustrated.
Probably is, actually, I don't know if toxic is. I think that they have
there's
been
frustration.
Yeah, the atmosphere hasn't been great. And I've been reading from accounts from fans who have season tickets and are in the so-called noisy parts and the big stand, whatever it's called. The Tottenham wall. And even they were like, you know, it's not terrible. Like, and people are still behind the team, but there definitely are aspects of it where people are berating people, and there's not a sense of togetherness and support that there probably should be this early into a manager's reign and into a league campaign. So there is a sense of that, and you needed a win like this. Like we said it the other day on Patreon, like he had to get a win here that was convincing, and he's got it. And he's, you know, this super goal is a moment that that's going to give everyone a smile on their face. Like a moment like that is brilliant for everybody that was there, because it just reminds you of why you go to football, to be honest. That's the thing. That is what's fun. Like, while I like knock it down for its like brilliance, like football's fun, right? And football is about entertaining. And Tottenham fans have been moaning that they haven't had any entertainment value. And maybe Van de Ven, after the other day where he's walked off the pitch and snubbed his manager, and there's murmurs that actually the players are sick of Thomas Frank's tactics, and then they play with a handbrake on, and that they're not allowed any freedom. Maybe Van de Ven's just gone, F it, I'm off. He's just going. Maybe it was pre-planned. Maybe he thought, I tell you what, if I get the chance to run at this defence, I'm going for it, even from 90 yards. So maybe there is a sense of it and I'm underplaying it.
One of the things you said in that first bit, you're like, it's like a dad at five aside, made me laugh a little bit, because actually one of the first things I thought was, it was a bit like being at primary school when one of the kids from the year above plays against kids lower down. He was like, I'm just too fast and strong for you lot, and you're not getting anywhere near me, I'm afraid. Far as it goes.
Well, that was it. And it just looked for a moment like the momentum of it might carry him over. And I think with unfit people, that's exactly what would have happened. Like, you'd have got so excited that your legs would give way and your body would tumble forwards, like I almost did in the dad's race once. I was so enthusiastic about it and refusing to lose that in the spurt out of the traps, my momentum almost sent me into a face plant. And I thought that maybe Van de Ven might have been heading into that territory as he got to the halfway line. But I forgot that Van de Ven's one of the fittest men in the world, and that was never going to actually happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it seemed to knock the stuffing out of Copenhagen either way. They collapsed. The next, about 5 minutes later, Spurs raced through 3-on-1 just seconds after it. And Joao Palhinha tapped home from a Christian Romero assist on the counter. Christian Romero flying forward. He was like, oh, well, if he's got one, I want one as well. And actually, he just didn't have the confidence to shoot. He laid it across for Palhinha to make it four. And later on, Copenhagen gave away a nigh penalty, like an incredibly lazy challenge on Dane Scarlett. But just as you thought that the icing might be on the cake, Richarlison smashed the penalty against the inside of the crossbar. So it remained at 4-0. And you know what? It was funny. Kevin Danso had to go over and console Dane Scarlett, because Scarlett wins the penalty and he clearly wanted to take it. And they've gone, no, it's Richarlison's penalty. We need to get him off the mark. We need to get him scoring. And he does that. So I'm pretty sure Dane Scarlett will be sitting there glowering at Richarlison in the dressing room afterwards.
Yeah. One of them will be gone in January. And let's see whether it's Dane Scarlett or Richarlison.
Let's see, indeed. Well, a good win for Tottenham and something to boost the atmosphere and boost the morale at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. A big one, and look, it's something that Thomas Frank can point to and say, okay, we're moving in the right direction. As I say, the change in the balance in the midfield looked really, really good over the first sort of 50-odd, 55 minutes of this game, and that might be something that moves Spurs forward going forward. Right, let's get over to the other side of North London. Arsenal were on the road. They went to Slavia Prague, and another clean sheet, another Arsenal win. Just feels routine at this point, Dean.
Yeah, I mean, whenever we're filling in scorecards at the moment, whoever's playing against them, you might as well just put zero in their column because no one is scoring against Arsenal. Yeah, they're winning run now 10 matches in all competitions, an eighth successive clean sheet, which matches a club record that was set in 1903. That's not bad, is it?
Not bad at all.
I'm guessing the quality of football wasn't quite like this in 1903. I don't want to badmouth those athletes from 1903 who are playing with the pig's bladders, but I reckon the game was a bit different back then. And I reckon the athleticism and the match scheduling and the competitiveness might be a bit tougher now than it was back then. But nonetheless, Arsenal have achieved something remarkable, both in 1903 and now. Let's look at it. I mean, Gabriel's unreal, mate. He's absolutely unreal.
Yeah.
I don't want to just say this every single week, but I'm gonna. Like, his defending's obviously different class. His corner routines are ridiculous because he always finds his way onto the end of them. But also, like, when I was watching this game, I was noticing how often his passing decisions lead to openings. Like he so often picks out a pass. He'll have two options and he won't take the easy one. He'll look for the harder one. And so often it opens the midfielder up to something that most teams wouldn't get. It's remarkable, really, how good Gabriel has become. He's always been good / very good. But he's absolutely brilliant. He truly is brilliant. Yeah, another clean sheet and another game where I'm just coming away being like Gabriel for the Ballon d'Or. Arsenal, they didn't have to be at their best here, mate. Like, I don't think Slavia Prague should be in the Champions League. Like, they're just not the quality of most of the teams in this competition. They're going to take it. If someone says, look, if you achieve this, then you can go into the Champions League, you're going to go. But at the bottom line is that they don't really, from this showing, deserve to be on the same stage as Arsenal, to be quite frank. I mean, one of the goals that they conceded from Mikel Moreno is like something you get in Sunday League. Like, balls played over the top.
This is a Slavia Prague team who've got 2 points in the Champions League, I have you know. They got a very credible 0-0 draw away to Atalanta. And in their first game, they drew 2-2 with Bodo Glimt, who are everyone's favourite Champions League team.
Yeah. Well, all I can tell you, mate, is I watched them today and they're rubbish. It was a run-of-the-mill win for Arsenal. And that's exactly what they wanted in a moment like this. There's not really too much to analyse because it was just a typical Arsenal day. And the best thing about it is probably that they've been able to give some subs a good run out. Max Dowman comes into another Champions League game, makes some more history. It's crazy, man. Like, not even 16 years old, this lad. Like, it's ridiculous. Better than any Slavia Prague player as well, by the way.
I felt a bit for poor old Lucas Provod. He gives away a really silly penalty in the first half because his hand's high, and then later on he thinks he's 1-1 back. So
thought
that
he won
can,
one.
And it actually, you know, him turns that out it's overturned. It. Yeah, it was him that handballed it as well. It's just like, oh.
Given the penalty, and it's like, mate, you're not getting this penalty. You know, if it's gone to VAR, you know it's hit you on the hand and that Ben White hasn't actually done anything wrong here. So yeah, it looked like Arsenal might have conceded a goal. I mean, who knows? David Raya might have saved the pen, but the penalty decision goes to VAR. All we know, mate, is that Arsenal are an excellent football team at the moment. 4 wins from 4 for them in the Champions League so far. An unbeaten run of 13 games now in all competitions. They've done this one without Gyökeres, who was left out. He's got a muscular problem, which they're feeling out at the moment to see the extent of it. They've been desperate, really, that this isn't bad because they've won him for that Sunderland game at the weekend where they can open up the gap at the top. But even if not for that, then certainly no, they don't want him to miss any longer than this. Thankfully, there's an international break coming up, which will give him a bit more time to recover. Marino's shown that if you do have problems in your centre forward position, you could always play him there because he's stuck another
I love Mikel Merino, man. Like, as in, what a professional. What a professional. He is asked to do any number of jobs. You want to, you know, if Mikel Arteta asks him to sit at the base and, you know, basically just sweep up defensively, he does it. If he's asked to play in the eight and get forward and make things happen, he does it. If he's asked to play as a number nine, he scores two goals. Like, it's just an absolute consummate professional who is capable of adapting his skill set to whichever role on the pitch he is asked to do. What a player. And that how so many teams could do with someone who's not just versatile and can play in a number of roles, but like completely able to switch his game based on what his manager is asking him to do. Like, he is not given anywhere near enough credit for the ability that he has to just fulfill whichever role Arteta puts him in and says, can you just handle this for tonight? And he just does it again and again and again and again.
Yeah, I mean, Arsenal fans, I've heard him sing, you know, Declan Rice, we got him half price. And he costs like £105 million. Well, Mikel Merino costs like £30 million. That's unbelievable value from what you've got so far. Like, that's one of the... If you go through the Arteta signings, like, he wouldn't be an obvious one that, that leaps out of you as one of the top candidates to be one of his best signings of his era. But I tell you what, at £30 million for Mikel Merino and what you've actually got out of him and what you have on a week-to-week basis as an option from him, he's outstanding value.
Very soft, fine wool is how Merino wool is described. Useful in variety of circumstances. I'm just saying, it was all in the name. It was all in the name. But yeah, like another set of changes for Arsenal. Ngakoue coming in at left back, showing all sorts of quality. Nwaneri playing, Norgaard stepping in for the suspended Zubimendi. Just absolutely comfortable as in the middle of the park. The depth here, incredible. And Arsenal with another lovely win to add to their growing list of impressive feats over the course of this season. Right, we'll take a little break there. When we come back, going to round up everything else that went on in the Champions League this evening. Don't go anywhere.
Welcome back to Ranks FC. It's that time of the show when Jack doesn't get to take breath. He just has to let it go and tell us everything else that happened in the Champions League on Tuesday night.
All righty, let's get going. One of the games I was really excited about tonight was Juve against Sporting. Obviously, Spalletti's first home game in charge of Juve. It felt like a big one. And we've not seen an abandonment of the back three just yet. Spalletti's football looks really weird in this shape. I thought this would be a good test for them against a Sporting side who've kind of grown into this season, I think, who've looked pretty sharp of late. Look, the way that Juve is setting up at the moment, Tejan Kootmeijners is playing left centre-back and it feels incredibly weird. Like, I still think we see serious changes to this system very soon under Spalletti. They started okay, but Sporting were always going to try and take charge of this against a team adapting in terms of shape, especially considering Sporting are so comfortable within their own kind of system and setup. And they basically did so after about 10 minutes. Maxi Araujo scoring a brilliant goal. Trincao picking the ball up in the middle of the park, feeding him in on the left. Rifles one across the keeper. Absolutely no chance for Di Gregorio with this one. And then seconds later, Trincao hits the crossbar himself. And at that moment, you know, you're about 10, 15 minutes into the game, things look quite bleak for the Bianconeri, but they rallied really well. And Spalletti deserves some credit here. They look a little bit jumpy in terms of fouls. Like, there are still some moments you're thinking, you know, jumping into stuff on a yellow card here and there. But Vlahovic had three shots in 3 minutes as they started to get on top. And then he got his reward a little while later for leading the line well. Started home from a good cross from Kefran Turam, who marauded down the left after a nice little yield its layoff into his pass. Juve came out in the second half with similar energy. And I think what improved off the bat was the fact that they were working Chico Conceição and Yildiz into the game far more to begin with. They also started to get far more physical in midfield and it helped them start to take the game more by the scruff of the neck from the jump of that second period. They're not invulnerable and Sporting did have their moments, even in spells where Juve had control. But the second half played out pretty much as you might have expected. Lots of Juve possession, Sporting sitting in and trying to hit from deep. The best chances falling to midfielders from distance. Like Thuram, the guiltiest party of spurning a couple on the edge of the box. Jonathan David came on as sub. He had a massive late chance to win it, but his header way too close to Rui Silva, and Sporting held on for a good point from them. A little bit of concern for Juventus. They've not been great in the Champions League thus far, and Spalletti desperately needs to get these boys onto the training pitch and into a four in the back, because without it, I just don't think his system is going to work at Juve.
Yeah, it's funny because I saw the lineups like officially before the game, and it had Cope Miners as left centre-back and it had Weston McKennie as left wing-back. And I was like, that can't be right. And I actually flicked over during the game and it looked like actually McKennie was playing right wing-back. Was that right?
Yeah, I mean, look, him and Cambiasso able to interchange at times, but it did feel like, you know, that when I looked at the lineup on paper, and I know that Cope Miners played left centre back in the last game, I was like, surely he's not going to do that. Like, surely that doesn't make sense. And I wondered if actually, in terms of the shape it would look like on the ball, Cope Miners would wander into the midfield.
Yeah.
But actually it was Kalulu who started to kind of get into those areas on the right. And he's been playing at right wing back, right? So you actually look at it, Kalulu was the player sort of charging forward from deep on the right hand side. It just doesn't look comfortable from what I'm seeing. And look, that isn't to say that Juve were bad today, because they weren't, but there just doesn't feel like there's that sensibility in terms of how the formation is sitting right now. And it's going to take some time for Spalletti to sort that out.
Yeah, let's rank underrated strikers and talk about Vlahovic, mate. I've got a feeling...
He should have had a hat trick here, Dean.
I know. Well, I've only seen so far. I've seen he had a chance... that was saved wide. There was like his back flick type thing that he did that went straight into the keeper, which doesn't for me count as a chance. That was opportunism.
No, he scored one. He had a header and then a shot in the first period that he probably should have done a little bit better with the first two. Look, I love the fact that he missed two chances. Then there's the flick. And then in the fourth time of asking, he takes one. And you know what we always say about strikers trying to get it out of their head and get to the next chance. He does take the actual goal really, really well.
Mate, his run for that goal is awesome. Like he goes out and then he comes back in. Like his movement is different class. I think he'll end up signing a new contract, mate. I wonder if one of the big positives that comes out of Spalletti is that they managed to get him to sign a new deal, because he looks up for it. And like I was speaking to someone the other day who covers Juve, and he was like, he's been good all season. He's been so professional. He's not desperate to leave. He just hasn't agreed this new contract that would mean he has to take a pay cut. But I'm not convinced that there's anywhere he's definitely going to get the money that he would want anyway. So I don't know. Let's see what happens, obviously, in the build up to January. Because the other thing with Juve is that Vlahovic's contract is up in the summer and they don't want him to leave for free. Like, that would be bad. So in January, you could get like 20 million euros for him. Like, that's where the floor would be for Vlahovic, which would, I think, be an unbelievable signing. If you could get into the Premier League for like £17 million, I'm all over it. But I don't know. You know how much I love this player, and I've talked about it at least 1,000 times on this podcast. But I'm rooting for him at the moment, mate.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think we're all rooting for Dusan Vlahovic to be a success, but it just feels like maybe every time there seems like one of these dawns, they turn out to be false ones. And, you know, I'm hoping that this time it's different. History would tell me otherwise thus far, at the very least. So we shall see. Let's go to another wonderful striker. Atletico Madrid winning 3-1 against Union Saint-Gilloise. And who else but Julian Alvarez to score the goal that sets Atleti on their way here. Great work from Giuliano Simeone down the right-hand side. Alvarez taking a touch in the box and then firing home. Atleti were on top in the first half. They thought they'd grab a second just before the halftime whistle through Griezmann. Turns out Baena was offside in the build-up. They were also denied a penalty in the second half. And I'm not sure about this. It was a very bizarre challenge on substitute Alexander Sorloth. I think the defender should probably be punished for this, because first and foremost, it's an absolutely ridiculous challenge to make. He leads with the wrong leg. I think there's contact. If the ref gives it on the pitch, I don't think it gets overturned. It is one of those grey area ones and it doesn't get given in real time, but it's really stupid. And I'm a big proponent of play stupid games, win stupid prizes. Just after that, USG had a massive chance to equalise. They ended up spooning wide when it looked easier to score. And finally, Atleti got the second goal that they deserved. It was another sub, Conor Gallagher, who fires home the one that the Metropolitano wanted. Good running from Sorloth again down the flank. I really like the way he started to drift into those wide areas, and he runs incredibly powerfully. This time he chops inside, he has a shot, and the ball falls to Gallagher. Takes a lovely touch out of his feet and smashes it home. And it kind of feels like game done at that point. But USG get a goal back from an unlikely source, and you'll like this, Dean. Across from Sofiane Boufal, which is nice in itself, headed home by Ross Sykes, who signed from USG from Accrington Stanley in 2022 wow. after a loan at Southport.
Wow, that's crazy. I love that.
Yeah,
that's
fun really fact. Good. Fun fact for you. Alvarez has a glorious chance to make it comfortable. He races away, but he's denied. Really good save by Kjell Scherpen in the USG goal. And actually, USG could have nicked a point late on. Sykes went up top and he headed one back across for Louis Patry, but he gets up way too early and he can only head it into the ground and into the very grateful arms of Jan Oblak. And finally, Atleti did what they needed to do. Marcus Llorente put in the game to bed. He tapped home after Almada's volley was saved as the game got madly stretched. But it was actually, you know, from a game that was pretty one-sided and not a great contest in the first half, turned out actually into be quite an exciting fixture. And I'm sure the Atleti fans wouldn't have enjoyed that very much because it was way too close for comfort, that big opportunity at the end. But they got what they deserved, the final whistle. They were the better team here, and a big win for them just to kind of steady the ship from a Champions League perspective. A couple of big wins in a row for Atleti, and they're moving in the right direction. As are Monaco, who won 1-0 at Bodo Glimt. Monaco are a really weird club to get a handle on at the moment. Like, they've been incredibly up and down, but they have found some joy in the Champions League. Obviously, the draw against Spurs, they probably should have won that game. They fought back to get a point against Manchester City, and then they went to the Arctic Circle here in incredibly difficult conditions, and they come out with a win. They played this one really nicely in the first half. They basically let Glimt have the ball, refused them any real opportunities on goal. They create a little bit more, and then they found the opening goal. Really nicely worked. Flo Balogun and Akliouche linking up beautifully. Perfect 1-2. Sends Balogun in behind, and he absolutely roofs it.
Mate, I've
from
seen
a tight
that
angle.
That goal.
Really
I literally saw it and was like, whoa. And it was a proper, like, just smashes it into the roof of the net. I loved it.
I enjoy those goals always. Look, Glimt up the ante in the second half, and they kind of got going in the second half really strongly. They forced Philip Kerlin into a couple of excellent saves. And look, the rain was pouring down. We know that the surface is artificial. There's this skidding Berg-free kick that he has to push around the post. Couple of big opportunities for Bodo Glimt. But when Gundogan was sent off for a wild challenge, it just felt like game over from the home side. And Monaco saw it out. Olympiacos would have liked to have seen it out. But unfortunately, a 1-1 draw against PSV for the Greek champions. Gelson Martins, I wrote down probably the goal of the night. This was before the Mickey van de Ven goal. So I will say that. I'm going to put it in the caveat of context. But a ball over the top of the first half. And I'm going to use the word again, an absolute howitzer of a volley into the top corner. Left the keeper with no chance. And look, I thought this one would spark into life a little bit more after an early opening goal. But in honesty, it was a really, really poor game of football. Olympiacos, much the better side, couldn't find a way through. And look, they remained in the ascendancy start of the second half. Martin smashed the bar with a volley, top of the bar, and went over. Really good strike again. He's got some of that, you know, striking the ball power back that we saw at Sporting. And he seems to be kind of enjoying his time, Olympiacos. But there was a late twist in the tail. And a really tough one, because it had been an incredible home support and a really good home performance from Olympiacos. But literally in the 94th minute of 95, Joey Veerman clipped in a cross, Jody Scouten flicked it backwards, and Ricardo Pepi whacked it towards goal. Keeper should absolutely 100% do better with it. But perhaps because he had zero to do all game long, he could only pull it down and it sort of trickles into the back of the net. Absolute smash and grab from PSV. But, you know, considering how good they were against Napoli last time out, I was expecting so much more from them. Olympiacos, much the better team over the 90 minutes here, but somehow PSV escaped with a point, which leaves us with just one, which was the early kickoff between Napoli and Eintracht Frankfurt. And it was 0-0. A game of few scoring chances, and I put down even less in the way of entertainment. It was just really poor. And I was excited about this, right? When you text me saying, No, I'm going to watch Arsenal and Liverpool primarily. I was like, what's the other early game? I was like, oh, Napoli Eintracht. That should be a really good game.
Not bad, yeah.
It was not. It was not at all. Eintracht soaked up pressure first half, tried to counterattack. They had a couple. Bahoya got through early on, but basically just fired it straight at Vanya in the Napoli goal. And to be honest, Napoli had a load of the ball and did almost nothing with it. Elmas, with basically the only chance of the first half, he sort of dribbled into the area and failed to kind of even challenge the goalkeeper. Michael Zetter has come back in for Eintracht and he looks so much more comfortable in there. He's had a couple of impressive games. Even in the loss to Liverpool, I thought he was Eintracht's best player and he conceded five. So that's not saying loads, but they appear to have sorted out some of the defensive issues that had plagued them earlier in the season. They kept a clean sheet against Pauli, and Pauli have been dreadful of themselves, but kept a clean sheet against Pauli. They conceded one against Borussia Dortmund in the cup as well. And then they had a good result again at the weekend in terms of a defensive performance. And it was like, okay, are we going to see any more from them? It feels like they've kind of traded a little bit of the attacking fun that we saw earlier in the season for a little bit more defensive solidity. Ansgar Knauf had a close range effort in the second half that was really well saved by Vanya. And the person that they would have wanted the chance to fall to in Naples, it fell to Scott McTominay in the 91st minute. Ooh. Really good pass from Andre Frank-Zambo and Anguissa across the box. And he just absolutely skied it. And you just thought, well, if that's happening, it's not going to be Napoli's night. And it just sort of petered out to where it was going. So 0-0 draw for Napoli. They'll be relatively pleased to have kept a clean sheet after shipping six last time out. But this was really one they should have won at home. And they'll be disappointed, I think, by the result.
Oh, wow. Yeah, as you say, that's definitely the man that you want that chance fall into. Didn't he do something like that at the weekend as well? Sean McTominay was given a good chance. I can't remember what stage of the game it was though. I remember being like, McTominay, here's the goal. And it didn't happen. It's like, maybe he's lost his magic.
I don't know if he's lost his magic.
But I think, gold dust.
I think it just feels a little bit like Napoli aren't creating the amount of chances that they kind of have been known to do. And so when they fall to McTominay, you're expecting them to go in. I think they were just creating more.
I mean, what a turnaround. The fact that every time McTominay gets a chance, we're expecting a goal. Fair play to him.
Serious footballer. But yeah, it was a good clean sheet from an Eintracht perspective. Napoli will be pleased to have kind of sorted out some of the defensive frailties that we complained about last time we were on Champions League Takeaway, but not perfect in terms of how the outcome went, which takes us through all the games, Dean.
Lovely job, mate. Well done. Yeah, so what was your highlight from tonight? Was it the Van de Ven goal?
It was. I love the Van de Ven goal. I've got to say that Gelson Martins volley was pretty special because, you know, we were watching all the different games at the same time and you're looking at it and think, okay, Olympiacos PSV is relatively low down my list and there's a goal like that early on. But the excitement I felt for that ending up 5-4, obviously it didn't, but like the excitement I felt about how that game might open up after Olympiacos cracked it open really early on and what a goal it was too. Please do go and watch that one. It was pretty special. That and Ross Sykes scoring for Union Saint-Gilloise fresh off spells at Accrington Stanley in Southport. Really quite something.
Oh my God. I love that. You've gone for USG on a night when Liverpool have beaten Real Madrid. Well done, mate. That is perfect Jack analysis.
I do what I can. And right with that, I think it's probably time for us to call it a day.
Thanks, Sam. Thanks for your words, mate.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Thank you very much to the rank of Mr. Sam Tye for blessing us with his thoughts from the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Thank you very much to Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been Champions League Takeaway on Ranks FC. We'll be back tomorrow with a roundup of all Wednesday's Champions League action. So make sure you're locked in. Make sure you're subscribed to the podcast.
And join
the
Patreon.
Here for more fun. And join the Patreon. We would love to have you over there as well for even more analysis and podcasts from the two of us. Fun, I think, is the way we'd probably describe it over Bants. On the Patreon.
Can you still say Bants or is that outdated now?
I think it's probably outdated, but I also think so are we. So it's probably fine.
Well, you shouldn't be. I am. I'm old.
Yeah. Well, we do what we can. Keep we do what we can. Right. Thank you so much for listening. We will see you guys tomorrow. Take it easy, Rank Squad. Peace.